This intro story, I think this has to be the most adorable intro story that we've ever done on News to Reviews. Lockie, make sure you check out that YouTube video I sent you through Messenger. This article...
You can see on my face that I'm frantically scrambling to try and do my homework. I'm like, oh shit, I didn't do my homework.
This article comes out of VGC. It was written by Tom Ivan. As reported by Axios, the JoyPaw console lets dogs play games designed to provide both physical and mental stimulation for man's best friend. While it was initially conceived as a means of alleviating boredom and separation anxiety for the co-founder's puppy when it was home alone, JoyPaw claims the console has the potential to offer cognitive benefits for dogs too, and could even be used to help delay the onset of canine dementia. Dogs use their nose to play on the console's touchscreen and are rewarded for correct choices via an integrated treat dispenser. JoyPaw games include a whack-a-mole challenge and a test to see if dogs can pick which side of an image contains more bubbles. Advar told Axios he also wants to make a game which sees dogs and human players compete against each other to avoid hedgehog spikes. JoyPaw's website claims, "Our company offers a holistic approach to preventative dog healthcare. We combine both cognitive and physical stimulation in the form of a dog-tailored console, a wearable and a software platform which allows you to track your dog's health indicators." A JoyPaw launch window hasn't been confirmed, but its makers say players can put down a fully refundable deposit of around $6, which will entitle them to a 5% discount. Are you interested in putting down this $6 deposit on a doggy console, Liv?
I don't have a dog, but I also don't trust that a dog wouldn't break this. Like, a touchscreen, that sounds sensitive. Also, you have to, like, is your dog smart or you got a dumbass? Because I just can't, I feel like the average dog isn't going to figure this shit out. They're just going to want the treat. But I think it's a cute concept, but I don't see this doing very well.
In the YouTube video, there's like a very short clip of a dog like doing the whack-a-mole thing, and it's super cute. You know, it's booping it with its nose and it's getting all the moles. But like, who knows if, like, you know, they've been filming for 1 week straight and this is like the only 10 seconds of footage they could get of a dog actually using this thing normally, not just knocking it over and chewing it and peeing on it and what have you. Lockie, what do you think doggy console JoyPaw?
Look, I love the concept and the science behind it, and I'll get into that. But just watching that video, I noticed that there was really only one dog that was playing with the game properly, and it was the husky at the end. And you notice how the other ones, like the dachshund, was kind of freaked out when its owner or handler was about to give it a treat. So that's concerning. It kind of jumped back and flinched in fear. So, and that was the best that they had. It kind of reminds you of The Simpsons where we had 20 takes and that was the best one, where they had Mr. Burns fall off the horse and get dragged around in his movie. So, yes, I don't know. They need a better PR team for this.
Yeah, well, it was clearly they didn't have like one of the first models there. It's like it was just a screen and then someone was handing out treats. But like the mock-ups they've shown, it like shows an actual device that drops treats out the bottom. But yeah, I don't know. How's a dog going to operate this? I don't know.
Liv, you were saying something really interesting about the dog that really resonated with me, because I have two dogs, two very different personalities. One's very precise and particular, and she's very well behaved, but she's got this approach where if she wants attention or she wants to grab at something, she will very slowly with her claws out scrape whatever. So she thinks she's being cute and she's asking me for attention, but instead she's just clawing my face out very slowly. So I would be worried with having her against a TV screen on that point. So I don't think this would be very usable for a lot of dogs. I think it would require a fair amount of training. Looks like husky, maybe a very well-trained husky, could be taught that, but yeah, I'm thinking the experience will be more like the Dachshund, where, you know, they'll do it once and not know what the hell's going on and be quite confused by the whole situation. Now, just something really, I thought that was such an interesting article because I like the psychological principles. It reminded me very much of that famous Pavlovian experiment with the dog, and they were able to work out that the dogs would salivate when there were prompts around when food was coming. And you could see that in the video that clearly bits of food were dropping out at the bottom sometimes when the dog got the answer right. And because that's what the husky was looking for every time he did the right thing, he was expecting the food. I think that's a really good way to keep your dog sort of entertained while you're outside of the house. I think that's kind of the principle of the Kong treats, but I don't know. I don't know about, you know, curing dementia, doggy dementia and all of that. I think it's interesting. There is something to be said for intellectually stimulating and challenging animals. Works for humans as well. Give them Sudoku puzzles in their older age. Apparently it helps prevent sort of the impacts of onset dementia. But, you know, it sounds like a bit of a stretch to sell a product.
I didn't even know dogs could get dementia, but, like, because they do. Didn't know this was something we're supposed to worry about.
Yeah, that's good marketing, because I didn't know about that either, but I was instantly worried. I instantly felt fear for my dogs, and so I thought, oh, great, there's a product out there for the problem.
Absolutely. Oh, another thing to worry about for our little puppies. Look, I don't think I could train Archie to use this doggy console. I just don't see him being into it, but I know he's responsive to music. I don't think I've ever got him to sing on the show before, have I? So there's like one particular song, and I don't know why, but Archie always sings to it. I'll see if I can get him to do it. Hey, call me, buddy.
Oh, he's got the dog there.
Let's see what happens. He's always here chilling on the bed.
Guest number four, we got Archie in the chat.
For a musical performance.
Can you get him to sing on cue? Is he doing it? I can't hear anything.
Didn't you hear it? What?
No, we can't hear it, but I'm just laughing at the tail hitting you in the face.
Oh, no way. Wasn't it coming through? Or whatever?
Maybe he wasn't close to that mic, but he was close to the potty mic, so hopefully you got the audio there.
Hello and welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories and also your place to be for impressions on the latest games coming out each and every week. My name is Zach. And I'm here with my co-host, Lockie. Lockie, how's it going?
Hello, it's gone well. Getting close to the Christmas holidays.
Oh, I know, I'm ready to be taking a break at this point.
Oh, I am hearing so all the Mariah Carey everywhere at the moment, so that's how I know it's time for Christmas. Gosh, she must have a lot of money.
I can't wait for December to be over. I am so busy. It's just nothing but recordings and work and gatherings and far out.
Oh, people love me and want my time.
You're right. I should be more grateful. And look, I am extra grateful because we have an awesome guest on this week. We have Liv from Between Two Gamers. Liv, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm hearing you're a little bit about a Grinch for Christmas season. You want it to be over? It's summer just started like 3 days ago, man.
Yep, I'm already over it. Yep. Oh, dearie me, I am a Grinch. I'm happy to take that title. What can I do? I got to be true to myself. I'm super excited to have you on, Liv. I'm a big fan of Between Two Gamers. As I mentioned to you before we started recording, I do not put together a News to Reviews docs without listening to the weekly roundup. It's such a great show. You got that awesome little quick 30 to 40 minute news episode, and then your other episode where you tackle other topics on the Wednesday. It's great. I really love it.
I'm glad that we could help you out with our little news, and it's so exciting to hear that you listen to our show, so thank you.
No worries at all. And yeah, speaking of your show, can you please tell our audience and everyone out there where they can find all the stuff that you put out on the internet?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Liv. My co-host, his name is Furry. He's not here today because he lives in the UK. So he is snoozing, getting his beauty sleep. So Between Two Gamers, every Wednesday we do our topic of the week. We do like game reviews, tier lists. But every once in a while, I get Furry to agree to do something a little outside the box. Like, why does this game have a cookbook when the characters in the game never eat food? Then we'll play games like guess what the game is, and we'll take turns like describing the cover art of a video game to see if the other person can get it. And then every Friday we do news and rumors, and if it's a dry week, I just start making stuff up for rumors and just start the podcast. So I like to keep Furry on his toes.
You're a trendsetter.
Yeah, so if you ever want to find Between Two Gamers, we have a Linktree. So Between Two Gamers on Linktree, you'll see us on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and everywhere in between.
And you'll be able to find all those links in the description of the podcast down below. And I am not going to plug the Twitch channel this week because I'm going to be having a night off from streaming this Wednesday because we're going to be recording a bonus episode of News to Reviews to have during the holidays when we're on break. But I will mention, I've been talking about our MoSpace and the Movember Foundation throughout the month of November. November has now concluded. It is December 4th, the day that we're recording this. I have shaved the moustache off. I couldn't wait to get rid of that thing. Oh, I had to get rid of it. I just had enough. I don't know. I felt gross with that moustache. I felt like a weirdo out in public. Like people are judging me with this creepy looking moustache. Like at least during November, people know it's Movember, so I can sort of get away with it. Is Movember? I know Movember is something that people do in the US, but is it big over there? Have you heard of Movember?
Liz? I know what it is. Yeah, I know what it is. I feel like it's really big for like streamers too. They'll do it. People just, okay. I don't really hear people calling it Movember. I just hear people just saying No Shave November instead. So, that's the only thing. Oh, okay,
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's massive in Australia. Like, literally, you go to the shops and every second dude has a mo during Movember. It is huge over here. And Movember raises money for men's mental health, suicide prevention, testicular cancer, and prostate cancer. Now, this is something that's very near and dear to my heart. I've had my own issues with mental health in the past, depression and anxiety. And so, yeah, it really warms my heart that we were able to do a little bit of fundraising. And thanks to our wonderful community and all our family and friends, and I want to especially thank like Brendan White from The Hungry Gamers, Lockie, your generous donation, Anthony from What Do You Think About This, Hunter donated a couple of times, Jaffa Mental who's on our streams. There's so many people, I'm gonna forget people, but thanks to everyone. We initially set the goal at just like 200, we blew past that, then 500, we blew past that, then 1,000, we passed that as well. In the end, I set the goal at 1,200, and people still kept donating. We ended up having $1,400 donated to our MoSpace. I'm very,
That's
very
great.
Proud of this community. It's well really, done, really, really awesome. I feel very lucky to have all these wonderful people in my life who are so empathetic and charitable and generous. Yeah, big thanks to everyone out there who donated or just shared the MoSpace or however you may have helped out. There was one person on the 30th of November during our Goat Simulator 3 charity stream that we were doing, Lockie, who no idea who this person was, just donated $100, complete stranger, just straight up donated $100. And
wow.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming to know that there's yeah, a lot of people out there who care and willing to help out whoever they can.
That's amazing. It's a good cause.
Bloody oath. I'm very overwhelmed with the whole thing. It's very, very cool. We have a very quiet week of news this week, but let's get cracking with it anyway. There's literally one news story, and then the other two are just trailers. That's all.
Because all
got.
Your news is coming next week.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is.
That's
all
right.
The Video Game Awards next week with the million trailers that'll be in there. Hopefully, we get to finance about
if we need to talk about a bit more stuff on the news side, the Callisto Protocol, I've just jumped into the Steam review section and it's getting mixed reviews. A lot of people are pissed off about the performance. So we can start talking about all the shade reviews if we need a bit more time. I love that stuff. I mean, I'm sad to hear it for a good game, but God, you got to love reading about it. The sass. I love the sass.
I'll definitely be covering that later on in impressions when we talk about Callisto Protocol, because I have been playing it on the PS5 though, but yeah, I've heard a lot about the performance issues on Steam. But our first and only real news story, it comes out of The Verge and was written by Jess Weatherbed. Interesting last name there. You know how like last names used to be like what you do for a living? Like, you know, Smith is like people who are blacksmiths and stuff like that. Like who... the fuck was a weatherbed? Like, was that a thing? Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, the Smash World Tour has announced that both the upcoming championship tournament and the 2023 Smash World Tour have been cancelled after Nintendo demanded the event organizers cease operations without any warning. As reported by Kotaku, the third-party event was one of the largest fighting game competitions in the esports scene. In 2022 alone, we connected over 6,400 live events worldwide with over 325,000 in-person entrants, making the Smash World Tour the largest esports tour in history for any game title, said Smash World Tour in a statement addressing the shutdown. The championships would also have had the largest prize pool in Smash history at over $250,000. This is a cursed... this is a cursed recording, this one. Before we continue with this news story, just a quick heads up. Unfortunately, Liv dropped out of the Discord chat and apparently has had an internet outage, the poor thing. So yeah, the most unlucky of timing right there. So unfortunately we're going to have to reschedule with Liv for another time until we can get all that sorted out. I feel terrible. She was very, very gracious guest and apologized a lot. And yeah, obviously it's not her fault, the poor thing. How annoying.
No, it's actually quite interesting seeing that these things happen in other countries as well.
It's not just...
I feel like I'm not so alone anymore.
Yeah, it's just not terrible Australian internet. I swear, this recording's cursed. We've had so many tech issues so far. Anyway, so to continue with the news story, the championship was due to take place between the 9th and 11th, with tournament organizers receiving notice of the shutdown the night before Thanksgiving, despite Nintendo having allegedly offered the event a licensing agreement in November last year. The offer came just after the Japanese gaming giant announced the Panda Cup, its only officially licensed tournament circuit for Super Smash Bros. In partnership with esports brand Panda. They made it clear that Panda's partnership was not exclusive, and they said it had not gone unnoticed that we had not infringed on their IP regarding game modifications and had represented Nintendo's values well, says the open letter from Smash World Tour, which claims Nintendo was being consistently straightforward, transparent, and direct in answering the team's question at the time. The statement goes on to...
When is the penny going to drop?
So, well,
this sounds great.
Look, basically...
Sounds so cordial and professional, and everyone's relationships are intact.
Look,
so
maybe...
When's the penny going to drop?
Maybe I can just give this in layman's terms. So basically, Nintendo normally would just let Smash World Tour do their thing and do these big tours, and this was going to be the biggest one of all time. And when Thanksgiving rolls around, like 2 weeks before the tour is supposed to go ahead, they changed the rules to saying that only officially licensed Nintendo events are allowed to use their IPs, which
that makes sense.
Which they've never done that before. So now it means Panda is the one that they've officially given their license to are the only ones who are allowed to do it. Now, Nintendo had their own statement where they said, we did not ask them to cancel their event. We knew how that would be for the players, right? At this point, it was Smash World Tour's choice to cancel the event. But it's like, makes no sense to say that because Smash World Tour aren't allowed to do it. Nintendo have said, if you are not officially licensed, you aren't allowed to do a Nintendo event. So they're kind of like trying to have it both ways. They're like, oh, technically we didn't ask them to cancel it. We just changed the rules so that you have to be officially licensed in order to do it.
That,
which is just like, admit what you're doing, Nintendo. Like, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. They're directly responsible for that because they released a statement declaring that it was illegal for any other areas to allow for their tournaments to happen. Mm. So, yes, they're directly they didn't make a direction to them to say they can't specifically, but they did make a direction saying to broadly to all companies saying it's illegal. So, yes, they did. They did say that. That is their responsibility. And it's completely fine for them to do so. It's their property. They're allowed to, you know, call the shots on what third party and companies you know utilizing them can and can't do. But yeah, that's so weird that they don't want to take responsibility for that.
Yeah, I just anyway, it fucking sucks to see Nintendo is the most backwards company when it comes to like people making content about their games. Like that you have to be in the Nintendo Creators Program. You basically have to only say glowing things about Nintendo if you want to be able to make content about Nintendo. It really, really sucks to see that they've taken the most boomer approach to all of this new stuff that's popped up throughout the internet, like all these awesome online like speed runs they do of Nintendo games and these things like the Smash World Tour. If Nintendo embraced that, they'd be beloved by all the Nintendo fans, but like they've just gained the ire of Nintendo fans by at first just ignoring these events for years and years, like not doing anything specifically to stop them, but like not showing any support whatsoever or doing anything to cater towards these events, which, you know, fine, Nintendo, whatever. But now they're just actively being like, no, now only we can do it, and we're going to do it with this one company. And I don't know, it really sucks. Like, I hate that Sony's been pulling more Nintendo moves, but out of the big three console makers, Nintendo is still just the most backwards company. Anything to do with the internet or online communities, they're just so behind.
Yeah, and they're very controlling. Ultimately, for them, it comes down to control, and they want complete control over their IP, which, you know, from a legal standpoint, that's within their right. But I get you. It's not a good look, and they've always... Yeah, I suppose I'm not surprised by this because they've shut down so many great community-based things that have come out about as a result of fans loving the franchise, and it's coming from a place of love and creativity, and then they come in and fuck it all up. Because one game that comes to mind, I can't remember what it was called. It was like a nuclear-themed Pokemon game that was fan-made. It was like called Pokemon Plutonium or something. Yep. It was something like that.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah. And it was such a cool concept where they let you catch Pokemon from the base Gen 1 and 2 versions, and you could combine them and mutate them. So you had a world of Pokemon mutants and all this weird, crazy nuclear-themed shit going on. Really cool game. Fan-based game, and Nintendo made a legal order to suppress and prevent that from being distributed because they own the IP. And yes, they can do that, but should they have done that? I mean, I think that's a hell of a shame for them to have shut that down and never release anything like it ever again. So it's just sad.
Mate, if they allowed that to go ahead, it would have affected their ability to get Niantic to just barely scrape...
Yeah.
Sorry, not Niantic, Game Freak, to just barely scrape through and create a new Pokemon game every year and try to iterate the tiniest little bit.
If they let these things exist, it would have created a higher expectation from the gaming community, and they can't have that.
Yeah,
because then they would need to release something that would be interesting and creative, and they don't want to do that. They do. I mean, hell, if we go back, I will, because I know I didn't get to speak in the last episode on this with the Violet and Scarlet, but I will say, because I was very negative, because it looked like shit in its launch, I powered through with this thing, and I thought the core gameplay and what was there in the plot was really fucking fun, and I absolutely loved the ending and the final zones, the sheer creativity, darkness, unsettling themes of it all. They were finally, it finally felt like, oh, Pokemon's finally getting interesting and a bit more mature about their product. I want to see more of that. And yeah, it's just one of those things. They flirt with the idea of creativity, but they don't ever like to make the full commitment.
Mm, speaking of flirting with creativity, there was another trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie. I sent it through to you on Messenger this morning. Hopefully you managed to check it out.
Oh, I saw it.
Yep.
I actually saw that. Not from you through, because it's all over the internet.
Well, what are your thoughts on the most recent trailer? That's how little news there is this week. We're talking about trailers now.
Yeah, we're talking about the Mario trailer. I mean, it's not as funny as the first one was, but maybe it's because they're just trying to cram in so many good moments into it, you know, because that's what trailers do. But yeah, I don't know. I was less interested in this one. I thought like, oh, it looks great. I think it looks like it'll be visually a feast for the eyes. I don't think it's particularly funny. I can see they're going for humor in it, but it's just, I don't know. Yeah. But it's designed for kids. At the end of the day, I'm not the target audience. So, you know.
I got to say, so far, and my housemate Anthony mentioned this to me as well, it seems like Chris Pratt is kind of the least interesting aspect of it so far. Like, his direction seems really, really bizarre. There's like a moment where he's like flying through the air, and there's like, you know, it's showing wind making his like cheeks ripple in that comedic effect, but he's sort of just going, and it just doesn't match the scene. It's like he's not aware of what's being shown on the screen, or he's not being directed to what's actually happening. He's just sort of like, oh, I've been told to yell here. So this is,
I think you hit the nail on the head there.
It's really bad. Yeah,
I think the audio came first and the scenes were rendered after.
Well, that is usually how they do it with animation, but usually they do a better job, I guess, of directing their voice actors. And there was another part where Mario, or Chris Pratt, because he's really just Chris Pratt as Mario, had like something stuck over his face. And, you know, what would you do normally when it comes to some kind of animation or video game to emulate that? You put something over their mouth and be like, ooh. But he was still talking completely clearly, even though he had like some suction thing stuck over his entire face, including his mouth. Like, it was just like silly.
That's interesting, because that's shit that they can fix up in post. They don't even need to get him to redo the audio.
Absolutely. It just goes to show, it's like, it doesn't seem like it's going to be very well thought out. It's going to be very, and like, surprise, surprise, it's from Illumination Studios. It's the kind of movies they put out. They're just passable things. It's going to be nice and colorful for the kids, but yeah, probably good, barely going to stimulate a single brain cell if you're anything over the age of 7.
That's the funny thing, and that's what I've noticed a lot, is these movies, it kind of doesn't matter what audio is there, because most people just watch it with the audio off and the subtitles on, if that at all, because the parents aren't listening to it. The parents just want to stick their kid in front of something visually. So as long as they nail the visuals, nothing else really matters. And I think that's kind of the guiding ethos here. With that said, though, I think the supporting cast is very good. And actually, now that you mention it, Anna Taylor-Joy, she's excellent as Peach. I love her rendition. I love how she sounds for that character.
But
I think it's very interesting.
But the one who steals the show once again, Jack Black as Bowser.
I thought you were going to say Chris Pratt. I thought you were going to steer it back to Chris Pratt being a bit of a dud.
Look, it is almost as captivating how bad Chris Pratt is as Mario as how good Jack Black is as Bowser. But no, Jack Black steals the show. He's freaking awesome as Bowser. I'm keen for that. And Charlie Day as Luigi seems to work. Like, they're both kind of wiry little dudes.
The Toad one didn't make any sense to me. I can't remember who voices him, but Toad's character, I'm just like, oh, what's... This is very confusing.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, I wasn't very confused when I watched the new trailer for The Last of Us. Most of it seemed pretty on point to me. I sent that one to you there earlier, Lockie. What are your thoughts on the latest trailer for The Last of Us HBO show that's coming out early next year, I think?
I don't think I saw that one. So I'll just say, I think it was a very interesting, I'm going to say very generic things. I think it was so interesting. I thought there were a lot of very fun ideas that they were running with. It's kind of hard to explain, but I find that with these types of trailers, it felt like it was getting a bit bland, a bit like it was the same sort of things being delivered in the same sort of trailers, and nothing really new broke from that formula. So you had the same sort of music in there, the same sort of beats. What I would have liked to have seen more was a bit more creativity, a bit more new ideas that focus a bit more on the gaming content and less so much on the cinematics. How'd I do?
See, this is where it would have been good if we didn't lose Liv. Oh, no, I wish her internet didn't die, because she was actually excited about this one and watched the trailer. And so did I. And look, it looks like there's a lot of familiar stuff in there, stuff that I didn't realize they were going to be covering, like From the Left Behind, which is the DLC that came out later on, which it's cool to know they're going to be covering that. There was like a very large woman you see Joel talking to at one point, and I don't remember any characters like that in the game, so I'm very curious to find out who that's going to be.
Are you sure you weren't just watching the Resident Evil Village trailer again?
I don't think so, no.
You're like, wow, this is really different. Oh, there's a big woman. I like this.
No, I mean, big in enjoys the odd McDonald's takeaway, not as in is really tall and can they can both stomp on you, but different people want to be stomped on by them for different reasons. That'll do us for the news this week.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for not asking.
It's time to talk about the PS Plus games coming up for December. So if you have yourself PS Plus, you'll be able to get these for free with an asterisk, because you're gonna pay for PS Plus, but hey, they're included with PS Plus. You get Divine Knockout coming to PS5 and PS4, Biomutant also coming to PS5 and PS4, and Mass Effect Legendary Edition coming to PS4. Now, Divine Knockout looks like some kind of, you know, Rocket Arena, fucking Fortnite, Rocket League, whatever, multiplayer colorful game that's for kids and they want to sell your skins. That's what it looked like to me. I wasn't interested in it. Biomutant.
Well, that took a dark turn. They want to sell kids' skin. It's terrifying.
They want to sell children human skin. It is confirmed.
Oh my God.
The Divine Knockout developers.
Oh my God. What areas of depravity have we sunk to now?
Biomutant, I played when it came out, which I think was last year, if not the year before. It was not very good. But Mass Effect Legendary Edition, it's the remastered Mass Effect trilogy, which I haven't played Mass Effect.
It's been out for ages.
Well, it only came out last year, the Legendary Edition, and I haven't got to play the first Mass Effect before, and it's sort of like they've given it controls and, you know, textures and stuff from the later games. So if I'm going to play the first one, it's the best sort of way to give it a crack. So I don't know. We've got the holidays coming up. I could see myself getting the platinum to one of the Mass Effect games. I love Mass Effect 2. That's one of my favorite games of the PS3 generation. Was that PS4?
Yeah. And on that point, I think Mass Effect 2 is really the only one that's good in that trilogy. So
3 was good. I'm sorry. 3. Look, I wasn't a big fan of the ending, but 3 was a bloody good game. It had the best gameplay out of the lot of them, and the way they wrapped up some of those storylines, like some of the character storylines, not the main storyline, I thought was excellent.
Okay. All right.
How they ended things with like the Geth and all that, and I don't know. There was a lot of really good stuff there. But yeah, so none of those you're interested in.
No, you're thinking of Seth Green.
It's not Geth, okay.
It was Seth.
Not Geth Green. Yeah, Seth Green was in
yeah, he was
the Joker.
He was the pilot.
And not the Joker.
He was the Joker.
He's the Joker, baby. So I'm guessing none of those games interest you, Lockie. So I'm just going to move on to the Game Pass games for December. We have Eastwood, the game that's shaken up all your thoughts about every game having West in the title this year. Nope, they're going against the curve. Eastwood, wow. This one is. Coming out.
Finally.
Coming out December 1st. I don't know why I found that so funny. The Walking Dead, the final season. What?
That's a TV show. That's December not a 1st. Video game.
Is it just a re-release? Because this came out fucking ages ago. Or did it? I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Totally Reliable Delivery Service, also coming December 1st. Hello Neighbor 2.
I love that title, actually. Just Totally Reliable.
You December 6th? Yeah, it did already come out. It's just like, yeah, anyway. Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, December 6th as well. Chained Echoes, that's a good game. December 8th. Metal Hellsinger, also December 8th. High on nice. Life. Yep. December 13th, Hot Wheels Unleashed, ooh. Game of the Year Edition, December 15th, Potion Craft, ooh. December 13th, Rainbow Billy, The Curse of the Leviathan, December 15th. Lockie, any of those titles stand out to you, my friend?
That Rainbow Billy, Curse of the Leviathan, that stood out for all the wrong reasons. It sounds like they're overcompensating for something with very little content or quality content.
It sounds like a Percy Jackson's story, like Percy Jackson and the Curse of the Leviathan, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. One of them sounded like Chamber of Secrets, so now I'm just thinking of Harry Potter. The Star Wars, Lego Star Wars, most recent one, that's really good, so that's good that anyone that hasn't played that will have an opportunity to play it for free or as free as a subscription-based service is. The Hot Wheels game I am looking forward to, because I saw some game footage of that. It looks like a whole lot of fun. Very creative. I like that.
It's on PS Plus. One... Do you have PS Plus?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, did you remember you should have added it to your thing? It was a PS Plus game like a couple of months ago.
Oh, dang. All right. Yeah. Wow.
We did talk right. about it on the show. Oh, well, look, you can get it on Game Pass.
It's been a big
now,
year.
Anyway.
You can't play them all. It's been a big year, and if it was worthless only a couple of months ago, I'm sure it'll be worthless soon.
Hey, you've got it on Game Pass anyway. You can play it with your beautiful, amazing laptop.
Oh, well, yeah, perfect. We're sorted then. Hmm. There was another in there, but I can't remember. So let's
I know what one it was, Lockie. What I was know it? You want to play this one. It what is it? High on Life.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Oh, thank you.
The
yeah,
old Justine yeah, the Roilando game that's coming out soon. Ooh.
All right.
Oh, jeez, yeah. Rick. Oh, it's another video game that Justin Roiland's in. Oh, jeez. No, I'm excited.
That's a
for
perfect
it.
Game. That's a perfect game to... I don't know if it'll be perfect, but that's a perfect game to drop through the Christmas holidays when people have the time. They're all in a good mood to have a few chuckles. Mm. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully, I'm not expecting miracles out of the gameplay, but as long as the audio lines are funny, I'm all good.
Yeah, I am... That is my thoughts exactly, Lockie. From the little bit of gameplay that we've seen so far, I'm not expecting much at all. It looks very... It looks like maybe the gameplay will be passable. I just want to hear funny things. That's all I want. Yeah. And I reckon it will provide laughs, which is... That's all I'm looking for. And it's going to be a Game Pass game. So, like, if you have Game Pass, you know, why not give it a try? But... The other ones that stood out to me is, yeah, like Lego Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga. That's great if you want to get into that. Metal Hellsinger. That was fantastic. Not my cup of tea, but if you want a rhythm shooting game with really awesome metal music, fuck yes.
Oh, it's so much fun, that game.
Really cool. And as you mentioned, Hot Wheels Unleashed. Yeah, I've only played a little bit of it on PS5, but it's pretty bloody cool. I wouldn't mind playing some more. But yeah, that'll do us for the Game Pass games. Time for the games coming up in the next week. And there's not a lot coming up in the next week, actually. It's like pretty... It's like the first quiet week. There's pretty much going to be one more week of games coming out where we have High on Life and stuff coming up. But all that's coming out this week is Hello Neighbor 2, which, you know, it's not my cup of tea. A lot of... It's very much... I think teen audiences really love this game. And like younger, like preteens, it's like more towards their age group. So there'll probably be a lot of people excited about that one. But yeah, not my cup of tea. That's coming to all platforms December 6th. Samurai Maiden, never heard of that, December 18th. And Dragon Quest Treasures is coming to Nintendo Switch December 9th. Any of those stand out to you, Lockie?
Nah.
Yeah, nah, it's a pretty quiet week this week. And like next week, there's not much coming out at all. This is pretty much it for the rest of the year now. Since Callisto Protocol's been out, it's the them quiet times. But how about we take a really quick break, Lockie, and then we'll jump back on in with the games that we've been playing.
Ooh-wee.
Alrighty, so we have lost our guest, so I'm the only one who's played anything, right? So I guess I'll get us kicked off.
I've been playing, but I've just been playing the Pokemon online competitive scene, and I'm fucking loving it. Jank and all, it's still a great game.
So what is it you're enjoying about the online competitive scene? Is it just you're enjoying battling strangers? Like what's
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm loving the whole strategy. Look, I enjoy Pokemon fundamentally as a game mechanic, and this is still Pokemon. And the thing is the terrestrializing gimmick this time around. So last time it was Dynamaxing or something.
Mm.
It's really good. It's a very, very interesting and fun way to strategically switch up the game. It makes you recontextualize Pokemon you wouldn't otherwise think of using, because you can change their typing on the fly. So you could turn a Pokemon that is, you know, normally bug fire type, for example, Volcarona. I love using Volcarona, has high special stats. You can teach it Mega Drain as a grass type, turn it into grass type all in a single turn, and they'll be expecting to bring you down with a rock move. So you can absolutely fuck their attack and then steal all their HP and set yourself up for a nice little team sweep. So I enjoy that. There's a lot of strategy that can be built into this game that way, and a little bit of fuckery. Because who doesn't need more chaos in their life?
So, look, I find when it comes to battling in Pokemon, and like, you know, I'm just a casual, I'm not like super into it. It really just comes down to, you know, making the right decision as far as the scissors, paper, rock aspect of Pokemon's concerned, you know, using the right type against what thing. But then also whoever has the highest level Pokemon. So like, do they do a good job of matching you up with people with similar level Pokemon? Because if they were even a couple of levels up, it's like, well, fuck, like what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah. So in the online, and your concerns are totally valid, because in the single player mode, it doesn't scale levels. But in the multiplayer mode, what it does is it takes your Pokemon and scales it to whatever stats it would have had at level 50, and that's it. So the only, its nature and stats and things, base stats can vary, and there's the RNG in that, and that's why you got to do a bit of farming for your strat. But so, like, for example, if you want, like, a high special version of that Pokemon rather than a high attack version, you know, that's what you need to figure out in your catching style. But, yeah, it does a good job in scaling it that way. So that's how the online competitive works. Otherwise, yeah, you'd be seeing very weird fuckery going on. And it also means you don't need to level your Pokemon to level 100 before it's ready. It just needs to know the moveset that you want it to know, wearing the items you want it to wear, and you're comfortable with the stat build that base stats that Pokemon has. Reckon it can do the job, you're good to go. Even need to finish the game. And yeah, I find that really fun, because it's a lot harder than the single player game, because there's never any challenge. So you're finally challenged, and you're finally up against human beings that are actually thinking about the strategy, and you're thinking about, okay, if I'm going to switch out my Pokemon now, first of all, they don't switch out Pokemon in the base game, but they do in the multiplayer. So there's a lot of thinking about it, because if you have a bad typing, or what seems like a bad typing, thanks to terrestrialing, you can actually turn games upside its head. Even based on what sort of appears to be the situation, it could be completely opposite. I really like that. I think there's a huge amount of strategy that goes into that. And also something I find really fun is most people just use Knuckles Stack, which is the new salt Pokemon, and they try and just use salt attacks and up his defensive stats and recovery so they can war of attrition you. And I enjoy that because I enjoy with playing grass type Pokemon, which completely fucked that strategy. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. Another Knuckles Stack. Well, guess what? I've got a Go-Goat. I'm going to use all my bulk up. So I've got all the attack and defense so I can do single move sweeps for the rest of the game. Your team's fucked. Thank you very much. A lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Are you telling me there's a fucking Pokemon now that's... There's a new type of Pokemon that's fucking salt type? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Have you played the game, Zach?
I've played it, but I haven't come across any salt type Pokemon. I didn't realize we're getting to fucking condiments now. Like, what is? Am I going to come across a pepper type Pokemon next?
No, it's one of the. It's rock salt, so it's a rock Pokemon, right? And you know how salt appears in naturally, so it's a whole bunch of rock with salt embedded into it, and it has salt themed attacks. It's great.
Okay, but it's not actually, there's not like a new type though. It's a rock type Pokemon.
No, not a new type. It's rock salt, and that's why it's so
okay.
It's a very fun design. Yeah.
Love it. Like, well, they've had Basil Leaf and stuff, so fuck it. Why not at this point?
Oh, they've got a literal olive tree and they call it Olive, Olivia or something. Like, it, so they've got that as well.
I'm still playing Pokemon Scarlet and I'm still having fun with it. I'm going so slowly. Like, I'm only playing like half an hour to maybe an hour before I go to bed. It hasn't been enough to sort of drag my attention away from wanting to platinum gains, but I'm still having fun with it. My Fuecoco is now level 30 and I still refuse to let it evolve because I can't let go. I've got a problem, Rocky. I just can't let go of Fuecoco.
That's fine. His evolutions suck anyway. I don't like him.
Okay. I still can't help but feel like I'm missing out on like moves or something by not evolving him. But
oh, you totally are, because he doesn't get his ghost typing until the final evolution. So he's. But with that said, ghost typing is actually now a liability because there's a lot of dark Pokemon, dark type moves that can just absolutely fuck ghosts. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think in this game, the Pokedex has a lot more ghost dual types than any other game before it. So what used to be a very interesting strategy against normal types is exact opposite now because you have very few normal types and mostly ghost Pokemon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And this is where you get into the actual thinking about the meta of the game and how it impacts the online setting. I would say that only the grass type Pokemon is competitively viable in the online setting, because she has dark typing. She's got grass dark, and grass and dark are very rare to come across in general. So yeah,
totally fair. Well, look, I think I will end up finishing it. I'm enjoying it enough, but yeah, I'm really unimpressed by the open world. It is just very very bland. Like, they still haven't managed to put anything of interest to make me want to explore that place. But the Pokemon are fun and the battles have been fun.
Have you come across the 10 wonders of the world? They look so shit. They're like, no. We want you to visually remember. So they've got visually striking landmarks called the 10 wonders of the world. And so, like, they're meant to be like visually striking things like beautiful waterfalls and what have you. And they just look so bland and shitty.
Wow.
Like, there's this cave system, and they're like, this is one of the 10 wonders of the world. And it's just like, oh, great, it's a cave.
I got up to, there's a point where, and it was probably the most interesting, coolest thing I'd seen thus far in the game, where I'm approaching a mountain. You can see these boulders that are rolling down the mountain because there's a Pokemon there that's chucking the boulders. Yeah. We're like, that's an interesting idea. But like, when I finally reached the mountain, it looks so bad. Like, it's nearly as bad as like N64 Mario when you're trying to climb up that first tower. These boulders don't look boulders don't look great at all.
No, they don't look great. But also, that entire area is a shit show. Like, the windmills. They've got windmills flying everywhere, but as soon as you're more than 1 meter away from them, the FPS, the frames per second of the windmill rotation, slow down ridiculously. So you're just seeing like 10 windmills in your vision, like, look so janky and shitty. And it's like, well, if that's what you're trying to present, why even fucking bother? It would have looked nicer without even having them there.
Yeah, it really is like a fun Pokemon game that's held together with paper clips and string.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, the Pokemon themselves look amazing. The environment is a problem. The core mechanics is amazing. The gym fights are fun. All the extra content, you know, in terms of the legendary, what do you call them? Like legendary beast Pokemon or something. That's all awesome and heaps of fun. And, there's so much extra content, but it's just the infrastructure of the game itself. Buggy environments have all these issues, shadow pop in, massive slowdown everywhere. Anything that's further away from you, that's a character or a Pokemon, in motion reduces in FPS, so it's horribly distracting, and it's like, just why even bother if you're not ready yet? Just why?
Yeah, totally with you. But look, I think that'll do us for
still great game. With that all said, let me just summarize that. With that all said, I fucking loved this game. The end area is the most creative dark shit that I've ever seen. Music, atmosphere, story, narrative, all of the characters that you meet do serve a purpose. Their personalities are very interesting coming together in this culmination of the story. Because most of it, you're like, there's no story, or this is all very bare bones. But at the very end, you're like, holy fuck, there's a story here, and the characters are interesting, and I am really feeling shit. So hope to see more of that. So, Zach, I would strongly encourage you to finish this game, get to that final area. It is worth it. It is hands down the best part of the game, and it's a shame the rest of it couldn't get up to that standard, because there was a real fucking game there at some point.
Now I will finish it. I'll probably play some more while I edit this podcast this afternoon.
And also let me know when you're finished, because I'll take you on. We'll do a news to review showdown.
I forgot that you weren't on last week's episode, so you haven't got to sort of give your final thoughts on Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Do you want to pop a quick review score on there? Then we can.
I had to do a complete 180, because I was really disappointed by the janky release, and it is janky, and especially those initial areas are kind of like they're stepping on their worst foot. I don't understand why it looks so awful, because it doesn't look as terrible in some scenes later on in the game, but it's like their worst shit is actually all in the first couple of hours.
Except what score you want to give it, my friend?
The game on release is not an acceptable standard, but it's probably, arguably, if it had been released and polished properly, it would have been the best Pokemon game I've ever played, with the most fun mechanics, the most gym battles, the most variety to my fights, the best narrative towards the end. First half of the game, narrative shit. Second half of the game, that's like 10 out of 10 for me. More of that, please, Game Freak, for the love of Arceus. I don't know, it's really hard. It's really hard. I guess I have to give it a middle of the road 6.
Okay, fair enough.
If they fixed all of that shit up, you would have a 9 to 9.5 game out of 10.
Yeah, totally fair. Totally fair, my friend. Well, I don't think when I finish this title, I'm going to be giving it a 9 or a 9.5. I have been playing the Callisto Protocol, and listeners of News to Reviews will know that I've been very excited about this game. I love Dead Space 2. Dead Space 2 was...
I've just been reading all the reviews, so I'm very excited to hear what you think of this one.
Mate, so Dead Space 2, I absolutely loved. I think when I bought a PS3 myself, and my very first TV that I ever bought for myself was like a 1080p Sharp branded TV back when Sharp still existed, which I still have that TV. I gave it to my girlfriend, actually. It's still working, that TV. It's like 11 years old or something like that. Fuck yeah. Anyway, the first game I played on that was Dead Space 2. And I remember, you know, holy shit, 1080p. This high definition PS3 game looks ridiculous. Games won't ever look any better. It's like a scary Uncharted in space. I love this shit. So when I saw, I played Dead Space 3, I was very disappointed by that. It was definitely not everything they hyped it up to be. So when I saw the Callisto Protocol get teased, and I saw something that very much looks like Dead Space, then you find out it's by someone called Striking Distance Studios that's headed by Glenn Schofield, who he was the co-creator of Dead Space. And a lot of the people from the Dead Space studio, which I believe... Oh, what was the name of that studio? I forget the name of it. Volition, was it? No, not Volition. Fuck, I'm forgetting the name of that studio. But basically, they were shut down by EA. Like they were okay. Really done dirty by EA.
They were muscled out.
They've gone on to make the Callisto Protocol, which is like a spiritual successor, I guess, if you will. You know, it's got the talent and they're making a space horror survival game. Unfortunately, I have found that Dead Space 2 is superior to the Callisto Protocol in almost every way. The Callisto Protocol, I am enjoying, but I think there's a lot of aspects to it that people are going to find incredibly frustrating. So you're playing as Jacob, who's Josh Duhamel, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's an actor. He's quite famous. You probably recognize his face. And basically, your ship crash lands on a planet where there's a prison. You get thrown in the prison, and then you wake up and all hell's broken loose. And basically, this virus is infecting all the people. It's basically zombie aliens, pretty much, in space.
Let me just say this on... I've always found the concept of a space prison interesting because resources are very scarce to begin with in space. It takes a lot of resources and money to basically get all the air, food, resources that can't be produced there on there. And at that point, when you've locked them up in jail and they're considered, you know, dissidents to society, wouldn't you just sort of chuck them out in the vacuum? Toss them out into space.
Well, there is a lot of that as well, too. Like, yeah, they've got I think it's Black Iron is the prison, and they very much do treat their inmates very, very roughly. But the story's very much threadbare, whereas they do a far better job of threading the story through the game in Dead Space 2. It's pretty much everything amounts to you've got to get from this place to the next place, and that's about it. And there's going to be a code you're going to need to get for a door, or you're going to need to get some machine turned on.
The movie. You're playing Sandra Bullock. You got to get from one place to the other, and George Clooney occasionally, or the ghost, George Clooney, who's achieved Jedi ghost form, is telling you some random shit along the way.
And that's the thing, like Dead Space 2.
And also, you can't get over your kid.
Dead Space 2 essentially was the same as what I'm describing now anyway, but they just did a better job of threading a story throughout it. You're intrigued to see what was happening with Isaac and all that sort of stuff. And I just haven't found Jacob to be an interesting protagonist at all. The story, there's just barely any story at all, and the dialogue isn't great. So I listened to the podcast, the Callisto Protocol Helix Station. It was just the most generic, basic dialogue. It's all shit that you've seen in every other gringy... Is that a word?
No, you're thinking of the Grinch, but cringy.
Whatever. Any sort of...
Or cringe grunge.
Or grunge. Is that what I'm thinking of? Grungy sort of sci-fi... story you've seen before. There's the Outer Way, who are like the rebel faction, and then Black Iron are like the corporate assholes, you know, your typical sort of stuff. But this one has like tentacle monsters in space. So look, first I'll start off with the good stuff about the Callisto Protocol. The character models look ridiculous. Like, you can see the sweat on Josh Duhamel's nape, and like it you know, glistens in the light when you're like squeezing in between vents and pipes and shit like that. It looks incredible. Like, there's this moment where and you'll see it if you play it, he'll sort of look back at you, and it's like just this little touch, but it just sort of adds to the realism of the character. Unfortunately, they kind of use it a bit too much. Like, after it seems like he does it like every 5 to 10 minutes, and it's like, okay, get it. You look behind every now and again with that same expression.
That animation cost us $100,000 to pull together. We're gonna fucking use that thing. It's funny. Do you feel like, I find on that comment with the hyper realistic graphics, do you feel like Do you feel like it was money or attention well spent, or if perhaps maybe they went a little bit too overboard in just focusing on that, that maybe they could have, you know, allocated those resources?
Look, I'll stick to the other stuff. We'll get into that, but I'll stick to the positives. Yeah. To the positives, okay, for now. Like, it looks absolutely stunning. The environments look amazing. The lighting is excellent. The sound design is incredible. Like, you'll walk into these rooms where you'll have this stuff that's spread out over the environment. It's got all like tentacles and like pulsating pustules. So you'll sort of hear the wet, squishy noises as you walk past this stuff as it sort of creeps around. It all sounds fantastic. And
if you're into that sort of thing.
If you're like, I think when you want a survival horror game, one thing you really got to nail is the sound. And yeah, when the sound
and tentacle wetness, you want that eldritch horror theme to,
that's right,
to
that's right,
through.
when the sound's working, it is absolutely excellent. And yep, some of the set pieces have been really cool so far. Now on to the negatives. So this is a small studio here, so this is not indie, but small compared to most AAA sort of budgets. And then they have 150 staff here, which is less than what the Pokemon staff has for some kind of comparison there. They have 169.
Yeah.
And they've managed to make this ridiculous, hyper-realistic looking game with really highfalutin animations. And my issue here is, I think the game that this brings to mind the most for me is probably Red Dead Redemption 2, where I didn't mind it in Red Dead Redemption 2 because you did have those moments where things would kick off and lots of stuff would be happening and it would be like very highfalutin action. But a lot of people had a problem with how sort of slow your character moved, how cumbersome the animations were, and how lumbering it all felt. And if you had an issue with that in Red Dead Redemption 2, then this is going to be a massive problem for you with the Callisto Protocol. I remember, Lockie, when you played The Last of Us Part 2 and you said to me, it's like I can feel the character's knee pain when I like jump off a ledge. It's like that times 10. Like, in comparison, The Last of Us feels like you're controlling a Sonic character. I'd compare the movement speed to more of like The Quarry or Until Dawn, but this is in an action stealth survival game.
That can work in a narrative driven game. It doesn't work in action.
So if you're just doing the normal walking pace, it is so incredibly slow, but they have L1 to sprint in inverted commas, which is the lightest of jogs that you will ever see. I get, because if it's a horror game...
So it's like
game,
me sprinting in real life is basically...
there you go. Look, great. I get how in a horror game you don't want the character to feel too nimble because you want them to have that sort of sense of fear if you get attacked. But it's like to a comical amount of where it's like, look, I can run faster than this dude. Like, he is the slowest fucking guy I've ever seen. And the combat feels really, truly awful. Having such a heavy character with the kind of combat, the gameplay that they went with for this, the decision making is kind of baffling here. Like, the way you dodge is you hold left or you hold right on the analog stick, the toggles, if you will.
Ugh.
Right? So there's no button that you're pressing in order to activate the dodge mode. So it took a little bit of getting used to, but I can get it to work now for the most part. But it just feels really, truly awful. It is not a good feeling way to dodge. And I understand why they did it. Like, I think the concept is they don't want you to be able to dodge away and sort of make space between you and the enemies. They want the enemies to be right up there in your face. But I don't know, it just feels really awful to play. Like, Dead Space 2 did a good job of making you feel like you were barely scraping through, like things were claustrophobic and you were just managing to get through from each horrific scenario to the next. This has that feeling, but the gameplay just doesn't feel nice. Like, Dead Space still felt good to play. It was very satisfying to play, and very rarely do I ever have a combat sequence or moment in this game where I'm like, ah, that felt good, or that was really cool. It always felt like, fuck, like, oh, I just managed to make that work. They've ripped off the telekinetic powers that they had in Dead Space 2 once again, but in this one it's less interesting because the design of the enemies in this one they're basically just zombies that they can, later on in the game, they can sort of grow these tentacles out, which if you don't shoot the tentacles, then they can like turn into this sort of evolved version of that zombie, whereas they end up taking more hits to take down and they're a lot faster. So that's where they've tried to
Didn't that kind of happen in like Resident Evil 4?
Sort of like you the zombies would sort of just keep coming at you. I don't remember if they had ones that evolved, but
there was one of those Resident Evils. I can't remember which one, but it was like if the zombie fucked around, if you shot it enough in like a certain spot, like if you shot its head off, then tentacles might come out of it and it becomes a much more difficult and terrifying version of the zombie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's very
similar. What am I thinking of? It's one of the RE ones.
It's very similar to that. It's basically you'll see tentacles start to come out of their chest or shoot out of their mouth, and you got to make sure you shoot that, otherwise they're going to evolve. And even if they fall to the ground because you've killed them otherwise, they can still evolve when they're on the ground. But in the Dead Space
I like the detail that it sounds like they put into that sort of thing.
Yeah, that element is the coolest element, but the Necromorphs were just a far more interesting enemy in Dead Space 2. So as I mentioned, you have the telekinetic powers. As far as the enemy design is concerned for the Callisto Protocol, you can pick up the enemies and throw them into environmental hazards, or pick up stuff in the environment and throw it at the enemies. Whereas the Necromorphs, they'd sprout these big spiky appendages. So what you could do was shoot off the appendages and then use your telekinesis to impale the Necromorphs with their own spikes. And it was super satisfying and super cool and was a mad gameplay element. Whereas this, it's just completely absent in there. You just basically got to bank on the fact that there's going to be some kind of environmental thing in that room that you can use to just throw the enemies in there. And it's very OP. Like the telekinetic powers are super OP. If you have a lot of charge for your telekinesis and there's an environmental hazard in the room, you can get through that encounter fairly easily. I haven't found it to be that scary because of all this. Like, basically it's like, oh, okay, surprise, surprise, another zombie has attacked me. There's nowhere near as many cinematic and sequences that they used to have in Dead Space 2. Like the amount of stuff that happens in the first 5 hours of Dead Space 2 is ridiculous. Like, you have this amazing sequence in a train that's moving. You're going out in space to repair stuff. Whereas in this, there's been maybe two sequences so far that have been sort of interesting. Really only one of them where you're sliding down a pipe that was really, really interesting. But for the rest of it, it's kind of just kind of meh. And look, I feel kind of bad saying all this.
Before we continue on, I think I'm getting a very strong indication that if I want to play a game like this, I should be playing Dead Space 2. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
That's my takeaway from this. I guess forget about Dead Space 2 for a moment and just assessing this game on its own, standalone. Is this a worthwhile experience enough playing it in that vein? It sounds like it's got a lot of issues or frustrations for some people.
And that's the thing. Maybe if you've never played Dead Space 2, you might find this absolutely amazing because you've never had experienced something similar to this. But even like I'd say Resident Evil, it's basically Resident Evil in space once again. You don't mind this really slow animations, lots of sliding through vents, lots of sliding between gaps and stuff like that, and just these animations where they're just really, like, the character stops to pick their nose at one point, it's that slow. I'm just joking, that never happens, but it's almost to that degree of detail they've gone to with the animations. I've bumped it down to easy, and I'm having a pretty fun time with it now because I'm sort of just pushing through it, but it's just so slow you don't really want to explore because you're like, oh fuck, if I want to go back and see if there's any stuff I need here, which it's a survival horror game, so you do need to find items to sort of progress. It's like, oh fuck, then I got to slide through that entire vent again. It's going to take me like 20 seconds of just crawling through a vent. If a game just really punishes you that much for wanting to explore, you just don't ever want to do any exploring. So like, yeah, it's yeah. I, I I think if you picked it up on special or on Game Pass or something like that, you'd be like, that was probably like a pretty cool experience. But I'd say put it down on easy because you're not going to have fun with the combat. So you want to just sort of get through it. And you might have a bit of a fun time, but the atmosphere I haven't found to be that scary. None of the jump scares have really got me or anything so far. The enemies are interesting, but like not as interesting as what they've been in other stuff. And the variety is not as much as in other games such as Dead
Space. I think that's a problem. Yeah. I think that's a problem because it sounds like they're trying to go for both at the same time. Are they doing a space horror game where you're navigating in a very difficult environment and then trying to make you feel horror and claustrophobia from the limited movement space, or are they trying to make a fun, engaging action game, in which case the control mechanics should be paramount and fluid and fun to feel and comfortable? Yeah. So you can't have both of them at the exact same time, because one is fundamentally meant to be in design uncomfortable and very scary to create that horror feel, whereas the other one needs to feel liberating and escape fantasy type, because that's what we play games for.
Look, I think there's like a balance you got to make, and you got to decide what side of the balance you want to be on. Like, you know, Red Dead 2 maybe leaned a little bit too much on the realism for some people. I found Dead Space 2 got the balance right. Like, it didn't feel like my character was in 10 times gravity. It didn't feel like my character had arthritis in the knees when I played Dead Space 2. Whereas this character definitely does. And it's clearly a design decision that they made. They're like, we want this to be claustrophobic. You want to feel like you're barely scraping through. We want you to feel like you're on the back foot all the time. But for me, it was just too much in that direction personally. And it seems like, as far as the internet's concerned, they seem to be leading that same direction as well too, unfortunately. I think I will finish the Callisto Protocol, but it's definitely a disappointment for me.
Just before we wrap up, performance issues. So I've been seeing a lot of reviews in the mixed review on Steam where that's paramount and it's pissed off a lot of people. So I'm seeing like people saying that they've you know, put their house on mortgage to be able to afford an RTX 4000 and it's still stuttering like shit.
Yeah.
How are you finding it in terms of performance? Now, forget about Pokemon, because that's in a completely different league of its own. Let's reset the board and return to a place of 40 to 60 frames should be the ideal standard a game should be shooting for. How's it doing?
Yeah, no, it's... So when I first started playing it, it was on fidelity mode. And I looked in the settings and couldn't find anything to change it to performance, which I thought was weird because I had heard there was a performance mode. The game doesn't tell you, but you can only change it from fidelity to performance and vice versa in the main menu. So you have to quit out to the title. I changed it to performance mode, it's run at a solid 60.
Nice. Okay.
With like the odd drop. Maybe it had a few frame drops here or there, just like one or two stutters, but there has been one crash, and I've only played it for like 4 or 5 hours. The game completely crashed into the home screen.
That's fair. That's totally forgivable on that. Nah, that's actually good for what I would see. Like,
I don't know. I think if a game's crashing, that's really, really bad. Like, I haven't had a game... I think maybe Dying Light 2 crashed for me this year, but I haven't really had a lot of games crash on me at release.
I've had the exact opposite. I find games are their jankiest upon release, and it actually takes a few patches before the normal crash.
Oh, yeah, jank, but crashes are really bad. Like the last time I remember games actually crashing, that was Cyberpunk, I think.
They're not good, don't get me wrong, but I'm coming from a Skyrim and Civilization 6 background. So Civ 6 will crash every 2 hours no matter what the fuck you throw at it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to be aware of. And then and then Skyrim, that thing would still... I haven't played it in ages, but that thing crashed every hour or so for any number of reasons. So if it's crashing less than 4 hours, I'd say that's really fucking good, especially if it's a game at launch, because a lot of those foibles will get figured out in patches. So if that's the worst aspect of it, that's not too bad.
Okay. Well, I'd say on console, then it runs pretty steady. But yeah, I've heard on Steam, it is real bad. Stutters, left and right. Okay. I have had sound bugs as well.
Sounds like it was
more designed
for a console game, console running, rather than any sort of optimization using, you know, current tech on the PC.
Yeah, PC port.
Would be my take on that. Yeah,
issue for
sure.
It
sounds like it's better a console game if you have that stuff.
So as far as performance, I've had sound bugs as well too. So when the sound's working, the 3D audio and everything, it all sounds great. But there's been moments where, you know, I'll be climbing up a ladder and then all of a sudden the sound of him going up the rungs just stops for like 4 or 5 rungs and then it will come back in again. And, you know, it's only little, but it's enough to take you out of the experience. Or like there's a moment where you're sliding down this thing and it's a pretty epic sequence, but there just wasn't the sort of sound to back it up. It felt very leisurely as far as the sound was concerned, which was a bit weird. So
it's like, funny. Yeah. I'm in a very charitable mood because I've been playing nothing but Pokemon for the last week. I think that's what it is, because I'm hearing this and I'm like, well, you know, that you experience a bug every 5 seconds in quick succession in Pokemon. All of that's forgivable for me.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think it's a shame.
As long as you're not clipping through the floor.
I think there's a really good game in here with the Callisto Protocol. They had some really good ideas, but they also just made some poor decisions. Some of those death animations have been fantastic, and the environments look incredible. And they do a very good job of making things feel claustrophobic and like you're barely scraping through. But yeah, it just feels too awful to play. And it's really not doing anything new or better than what games have done in the past. So, yeah. But yeah. But I think that's where I'll leave it for Callisto Protocol for this week. Unless you had any questions for me, Lockie, I think I've...
We got a score?
Nah, not yet. I'll wait till I finish it. I will finish it, which I'll probably finish it over the next week, and I'll give it a score next week. But yeah, it's looking...
How about question on this at the moment? Buy or don't buy?
Oh, definitely not a buy.
I'm just asking for me.
No, yeah, definitely not a buy. I'd say at this stage, I'd recommend it if it's a Game Pass game, or if you see like a decent sale. I'm talking like 40% to 50% off, then I'd say go for it. But at the moment, which is, as I said, disappointing.
Yeah, good to know. It's 80 on Steam at the moment. So all right, I'll hold off on that one then.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but that'll do us for news to reviews for another week. We got through it, this most cursed recording, with so many tech issues.
Strangely enough, no tech issues from me and no internet issues. I've been an island in this one. Wow. All of this bad energy I've experienced throughout the year, and I think I just got it all out of the way. So it's just smooth sailing for the next couple of runs. Oh.
And don't worry, peeps, we'll hit up Liv and we'll get her back on the show at some point, sometime in the near future. Hopefully December or January. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, for now, if you want to check out everything News to Reviews does, check out all our socials. I won't be streaming on Twitch this week because we will be recording a bonus episode of the show. But if you like News to Reviews, please rate and review us wherever you listen to the podcast. That's the best way you can help us get in the ears of more people. Lockie, do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners this week?
Oh, look, I'm feeling a little bit disappointed, actually, that we're not going to get to do a Twitch stream, because that's the most fun that I've been having throughout the week. You know, getting to play the Goat Game with you, Goat Simulator 3, has been so much fun. It's just chaos, utter chaos, but with great polish and graphics and design to the game that you wouldn't expect in a game like that. Yeah. It's just been a real treat to enjoy that type of game with you. So I'll be keen to see the exciting culmination of that one, because also we are on a bit of a... We haven't finished the ending, but we're pretty bloody close, aren't we?
Yeah, we're nearly
there.
Big
ass door.
So probably the following week, I'll make sure to keep that Wednesday free. It's just December be Decemberin, and it's just things have just been moving around, and I got to get that bonus episode recorded because we're going on break pretty soon. After this episode, there's only 2 more episodes of News to Reviews before the end of the year, and then it's our bonus stuff, such as the News to Reviews Game Awards Part 3, which I'm very much looking forward to recording. But yeah, everyone out there, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another.
No worries, all good. Truly, that's funny. It is cursed.
This is absolutely cursed. Next, you'll have something go wrong.
You've said it. Never call attention to my internet.
No, but
it doesn't it startles easily. We never give it any attention or presence.
But because I said something will go wrong.
No, doesn't
that
work
negates
that way.
It makes it less likely for something to go wrong.
Doesn't. You don't talk about it at all. Positive or negative attention, it freaks the fuck out.
Treat it like Voldemort in the early Harry Potter books.
It's like a deer. You make any movements at all of any kind, it will freak out. And it'll make that horrible noise that deers make that you don't think they would make that noise. It's like, ah!
Like a T-Rex.
So many people believe in like terrifying mythological monsters in the woods, and it's just deer making terrifying noises at night. But people hear it, they go, "What the fuck is that?"
Don't they like almost scream like the noises they make?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. It's horrible. I think kind of like the velociraptors from Jurassic Park were kind of, I think deer was one of their inspirations there.
Oh, yeah, true. When they like really make that loud noise,
yeah.
It's like almost like a screech.
Ooh. Yeah, it's something otherworldly, but kind of vaguely sounds human.
Or they're like jumping in front of someone's car. That's the other thing.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they do that. I don't think they're doing it, like, intentionally. I don't think they're, like, waiting for a car to come and then go, oh, yeah, there's one. Can't wait.
I think you're underestimating deer, Lockie.
I think they just move really quickly. They run a lot, and they're flighty, and they move really quickly, and they're probably not expecting this giant metal beast driving at 100 kilometers an hour.
No, they're trying to take down humanity one car accident at a time, Lockie, okay? don't you give in to the deer propaganda. They want you to think that there's nothing going on, but trust me.
Okay, deer.
Got
the puns.
Dear.
We got
oh,
some,
dear. Yeah. Oh, dearie me.
Oh, dear.
This is all recording, actually. I can use this as an Easter egg.
That's right, dear. Blooper materials.
This is what we do when internet is poo.